Hello, my name is David Raichel. I am the director of the University of Wisconsin Integrative Medicine Program in the Department of Family Medicine. And this is a podcast on non-pharmaceutical ways to treat hypertension. We're mainly going to explore lifestyle influences, nutrition, and mind-body influences. We'll also explore some nutritional supplements and see how these may be incorporated as well into a therapeutic plan. The goal here is to create lifestyle change that will help reduce sympathetic tone of the blood vessels as well as lower blood pressure overall, so we become less dependent on pharmaceuticals for this, knowing that often pharmaceuticals are needed to help reduce risk. We will first start with reviewing some lifestyle effects, and these are pretty straightforward ones that we know are important, but they're so important they weren't addressing here. So the first is weight loss. Again, as little as 10 pounds can have a significant effect on blood pressure. And the second is physical activity. We've yet to find a disease that physical activity isn't good for. 30 to 4 minutes daily of movement, aerobic activity can reduce blood pressure on average 5 to 10 points. The DASH diet. The DASH diet, or DASH, stands for Dietary Approaches to Stop Hypertension. It is a Mediterranean-type diet that is high in fruits and vegetables, low in dairy, animal meat, and saturated fats, high in nuts, seeds, and beans, and low in processed foods such as snacks and sweets. The Mediterranean diet, or the DASH diet, is very rich in potassium-rich foods, and potassium-rich foods have a tendency to help lower blood pressure. It's also low in added salt, and sodium restriction or a low-salt diet is another very important ingredient in lowering blood pressure. The body only needs about a quarter teaspoon of salt a day. So for any of our hypertensive patients, it's important to have them take the salt shaker off the table and really avoid sodium-rich foods. Alcohol restriction, anything greater than 2 drinks a day for men and 1 drink a day for women, can exacerbate blood pressure, and of course, smoking cessation is key. Now let's explore a little bit more about nutrition. There are some superfoods, if you will, that are important in helping lower blood pressure. First of all, those foods that make us stink are often very good for us, such as garlic and onions. Garlic, if we eat the garlic 10 minutes after we chop it up, that activates the active ingredients that seem to be very beneficial for the cardiovascular system. That's much better than taking garlic in a capsule, which has been chopped up in a factory, and by the time you ingest it in capsule form, the active ingredient has aged and is no longer effective. So eating garlic fresh in your cooking is much better than taking it in supplement form. Foods rich in proanthocyanidins and polyphenols, such as pomegranate, blueberries, any dark purple blueberry or grape is rich in these chemicals that help create more flexibility of the endothelium and are really good for the heart. Cold water fish, nuts, green leafy vegetables are also very rich in omega-3 fatty acids, which not only have a beneficial influence on blood pressure, but also help reduce inflammation that can further increase the risk of heart disease. Now let's next address some of the mind-body influences on blood pressure. We all see that patient who comes in with a white coat hypertension. What is white coat hypertension other than an emotional response that raises blood pressure? So we can use that to really help the patient learn how to control that. And there's a number of different ways that we can help our patients recognize how emotions such as anxiety, hostility, and anger can start a cascade of negative influences that go from our perception of information in our environment that stimulates the limbic system and the hypothalamic pituitary axis that then goes down to the autonomic nervous system and increases sympathetic tone that can raise blood pressure. So helping bring awareness into how someone's life might be influencing their blood pressure is key. There's a few tools that can be helpful. Number one is meditation. There's been some great research showing that many different types of meditation can lower blood pressure. Probably the most research has been done on transcendental meditation, which is a process of allowing the mind to focus on a word or mantra. So let's say that you pick a word such as peace. In the meditation, you allow your mind to focus on that word peace. And if the mind gently wanders away to think about thoughts of the day, you gently bring your thought back to that word peace. So in essence, it's a centering practice that gets the mind out of the thoughts of chaos and I need to do this to a word that stimulates a sense of relaxation and peace, hopefully, that then has a cascade of positive effects through the body that can lower blood pressure. As with any beneficial influence on health, this has to be practiced in order for the body to learn it. And this can have significant positive influences on improving blood pressure. A mindfulness course can do a similar process. But again, this isn't something that is as easy as taking a pill, but the rewards on health are much greater in that if someone takes an 8-week mindfulness course, this is how long it takes to really create insight and understanding of how this insightful contemplative process can really enhance health at its deepest root by changing our perception to create more positive emotions versus negative emotions such as hostility and anger that can exacerbate blood pressure. One of the more exciting areas in regards to blood pressure and mind-body influences is some biofeedback devices. And these devices mainly help understand how breathing can influence blood pressure. Many of these devices, such as RespiRate or HeartMath or the Stress Eraser, help slow down the breathing rate. And when we slow down the breathing rate to about five to six breaths per minute, we enhance baroreceptor sensitivity that helps increase our heart rate variability. And we know that someone with increased heart rate variability is at much lower risk of developing sudden cardiac death as well as cardiovascular disease. Now, if we look at our pediatric populations, even at the beginning, when we look at the heart rate monitors, when we're delivering babies and we see that nice increase in heart rate variability on the monitor showing that the baby is responsive to its environment, that means that its heart rate is going up when stimulated and may go down when it's sleeping. And that up and down line tells us that this baby is responsive to its environment, and that's a good healthy sign. When that heart rate variability goes down in that baby, we know it's not responding to its environment and their risk for danger is much higher. This is no different than adults. When we listen to kids' heartbeats, you know, we have a 5-year-old come into the office and they take a deep breath and their heart rate goes way up and they breathe out and their heart rate goes way down. That physiological response to the breath is a really healthy sign. Unfortunately, we have a tendency to lose this with life. And if all we're doing is sitting in front of a computer screen with no exercise and no stimulation to the day, we actually lose sensitivity of our baroreceptors to that stimuli that creates heart rate variability. And that increases our risk of cardiovascular disease, and it can result in higher blood pressure. So learning some techniques through the breath, through some of these biofeedback techniques, can really enhance that parasympathetic tone, which subsequently will enhance heart rate variability and lower blood pressure. Now, some of these devices can be very helpful in helping teach this, but we don't have to go out and drop $250 on one of these biofeedback devices. You can just teach your patients slow, deep abdominal breath work. This doesn't cost anything, and all you need is maybe a watch at the beginning to help slow the breath or just have the patient count. So when they first start doing these deep abdominal breathing exercises that are reviewed in the handout on our website, have them breathe in for a count of 3 or 4, and then have them breathe out for a count of 6 or 7. So it appears through the research that when we slow the breathing rate down to 5 to 6 breaths per minute, that's the rate that seems to have the most stimulation to the baroreceptors, which enhances heart rate variability the most, and then lowers blood pressure on average of 14 points systolic and 8 points diastolic. The nice thing about having patients learn this is that this, again, has health benefits that go far beyond hypertension. Often we just get focused on lowering the numbers of the blood pressure, but if we really get at the root of what the body needs for their blood pressure to go down, we'll be helping prevent numerous diseases and not just cardiovascular disease. So I like to encourage my patients to use these techniques because they really help get at the root of the problem. Now, let's lastly go over some nutritional supplements that may have a beneficial influence on blood pressure. I have a tendency to downplay these for hypertension because we do have excellent generic pharmaceutical medications that do a really good job. And unless nutritional supplements helps reduce other risk, I wouldn't start out with them just to lower blood pressure. But if someone has mild hypertension and you're exploring lifestyle changes, some of these nutritional supplements may be of benefit. One that I'd like to start with is coenzyme Q10. Coenzyme Q10, or ubiquinone, is in every cell in the human body. It works through the mitochondria to create energy, or ATP, and has been found to be beneficial in heart failure. It's also been found to be beneficial in reducing myositis in patients on statins. Statins, as well as tricyclic antidepressants and other medications, can lower serum levels of coenzyme Q10, and a fairly recent study in one of the cardiovascular journals showed that 100 milligrams of coenzyme Q10, when given to patients on statins, helped reduce myositis or muscle soreness by approximately 40% while also improving function. So if you have a patient who has hypertension and is on a statin and they're having some muscle soreness, adding coenzyme Q10, 60 milligrams in the gel form, which is better absorbed, or 100 to 150 milligrams of the non-gel form daily can be beneficial in potentially reducing their myositis while also helping lower their blood pressure. Coenzyme Q10 is a little expensive, and that's probably its worst side effect. Fish oil is another one that I'll often recommend because it does much more than lower blood pressure. It also helps reduce cardiovascular risk as well as inflammation as well as triglycerides. Fish oil has a minor effect on blood pressure. But again, since it has so many other good benefits in helping reduce risk, I'll often put patients on a gram of fish oil a day. Remember, that's you have to add the EPA and DHA together on the label. So if there's 600 milligrams of EPA and 400 milligrams of DHA, that's 1 gram of fish oil a day. In the Gezi trial, at least, that 800 to 1,000 milligrams of EPA plus DHA was found to be very beneficial in helping reduce the risk of a second heart attack. Another supplement that can be helpful is magnesium. Again, magnesium is a smooth muscle relaxer, which can help moderately reduce blood pressure. I'll recommend chelated magnesium or magnesium glycinate or aspartate, which cause less diarrhea, and the average dose is 500 to 750 milligrams at bedtime. Potassium, I generally don't give a lot of potassium as a supplement and encourage them to get this through their vegetables that are very rich in potassium, but potassium has also been found to help lower blood pressure, as does calcium. And calcium, since this has other benefits, particularly in women, in helping reduce the risk of osteoporosis, having someone take calcium may have also the added benefit of lowering blood pressure. Remember, they should take this with vitamin D. Taking calcium, particularly in men, without supplementing with vitamin D may reduce the conversion of vitamin D in the skin. And then we have lower levels of vitamin D, which may place people at higher risk of other diseases such as prostate cancer or other cancers. So particularly if your patients live in the northern latitudes where the sun is lower on the horizon, particularly in the wintertime, supplementing with 800 to 1,000 international units of vitamin D3 or cholecalciferol is important. Now, there's a few plants and botanicals that have been found to help lower blood pressure. Again, I generally don't encourage these unless my patient is philosophically against pharmaceuticals. And if that's the case, hawthorn berry has been found to help lower blood pressure. Not a lot. It may also have some stabilizing effects on the heart rhythm, but 0.5 to 1 milliliter 3 times a day of the extract, hawthorn extract, or 600 to 1800 milligrams a day of the whole herb may prove beneficial in slightly lowering blood pressure. Again, the supplement and herbal effects, as well as I would argue pharmaceutical effects, often will work much better if you also explore these lifestyle measures discussed above. One last nutritional supplement that should be mentioned are milk peptides. There has been some interesting research showing that milk, that when it is combined with some of the enzymes and bacteria that create the fermentation process, results in some peptides that have an angiotensin-converting enzyme inhibiting effect. in order to get this through your nutrition, you would have to drink sour milk because it's the process of fermentation that results in these proteins that have a blood pressure lowering effect. Most people would not enjoy drinking sour milk, so there is a nutritional supplement that's available over the counter. This is called Amyl BP or Amyl Peptide that may have an ACE inhibitory effect. I've not found this to have any significant value over generic ACE inhibitors, so I'll generally just prescribe a generic ACE inhibitor. But if for some reason someone wants to avoid a generic ACE inhibitor, Amyl Peptide, which comes from sour milk, may prove beneficial. So in summary, in helping patients reduce their own blood pressure, I first discuss important lifestyle measures such as weight loss, physical activity, DASH diet or the Mediterranean diet, sodium restriction, alcohol restriction, and tobacco cessation. We'll then explore some important mind-body influences of how they can learn from their blood pressure and actually use their blood pressure as somewhat of a biofeedback mechanism to help them understand how their emotions and how the life stressors can increase sympathetic tone and how they can reverse that process through conscious choice. And this is a big one that goes much deeper than simply taking a pill. And lastly, there are some nutritional supplements that may prove beneficial. Calcium may help not only prevent bone loss, but may mildly lower blood pressure. Coenzyme Q10 may be beneficial if someone's on a statin and has myositis as well as high blood pressure. Potassium can be beneficial, and magnesium to help result in vasodilation and smooth muscle relaxation can also be helpful. I strongly encourage patients to learn some breathing techniques that can lower blood pressure, and if they like, there's some products available to purchase that can be used to help them learn how their breath can help lower their blood pressure, and these are available in the handout. The handout on non-pharmaceutical approaches to hypertension can be found at www.fammed.wisc.edu/integrative. And that's it. Thank you for listening, and have a great day. Bye-bye.